In all probability, the man and woman with the flashlight had alerted the police. It was Sunday night, Easter Sunday. The next day, Easter Monday, the office was going to be closed, which meant we wouldn't be able to move around until Tuesday morning. Think of it, having to sit in such terror for a day and two nights. We thought of nothing, but simply sat there in pitch darkness. In her fear, Mrs. Van D had switched off the lamp. We whispered, and every time we heard a creak, someone said, "Shh, shh." It was 10:30, then 11. Not a sound. Father and Mr. Van Dan took turns coming upstairs to us. Then, at 11:15, a noise below. Up above, you could hear the whole family breathing. For the rest, no one moved a muscle. Footsteps in the house, the private office, the kitchen, then on the staircase. All sounds of breathing stopped. Eight hearts pounded. Footsteps on the stairs, then a rattling at the bookcase. This moment is indescribable. "Now we're done for," I said, and I had visions of all 15 of us being dragged away by the Gestapo that very night. More rattling at the bookcase, twice. Then we heard a can fall and the footsteps receded. We were out of danger, so far. A shiver went through everyone's body. I heard several sets of teeth chattering. No one said a word. We stayed like this until 11:30. There were no more sounds in the house, but a light was shining on our landing, right in front of the bookcase. Was that because the police thought it looked so suspicious, or because they simply forgot? Was anyone going to come back and turn it off? We found our tongues again. There were no longer any people inside the building, but perhaps someone was standing guard outside. We then did three things. Tried to guess what was going on, trembled with fear, and went to the bathroom. Since the buckets were in the attic, all we had was Peter's metal waste paper basket. Mr. Van Dan went first, then Father, but Mother was too embarrassed. Father brought the waste basket to the next room, where Margot, Mrs. Van Dan, and I gratefully made use of it. Mother finally gave in. There was a great demand for paper, and luckily I had some in my pocket. The waste basket stank. Everything went on in a whisper, and we were exhausted. It was midnight. "Lie down on the floor and go to sleep." Margot and I were each given a pillow and a blanket. Margot lay down near the foot cupboard, and I made my bed between the table legs. The smell wasn't quite so bad when you were lying on the floor, but Mrs. Van Dan quietly went and got some powdered bleach and draped a dish towel over the potty as a further precaution. Talk, whispers, fear, stench, farting, and people continually going to the bathroom. Try sleeping through that. By 2:30, however, I was so tired I dozed off and didn't hear a thing until 3:30. I woke up when Mrs. Van D laid her head on my feet. "For heaven's sake, give me something to put on," I said. I was handed some clothes, but don't ask what. A pair of wool slacks over my pajamas, a red sweater and a black skirt, white understockings, and tattered knee socks. Mrs. Van D sat back down on the chair, and Mr. Van D lay down with his head on my feet. From 3:30 onward, I was engrossed in thought, and still shivering so much that Mr. Van Dan couldn't sleep. I was preparing myself for the return of the police. We'd tell them we were in hiding. If they were good people, we'd be safe. And if they were Nazi sympathizers, we could try to bribe them. "We should hide the radio," moaned Mrs. Van D. "Sure. In the stove," answered Mr. Van D. "If they find us, they might as well find the radio." "Then they'll also find Anne's diary," added Father. "So burn it," suggested the most terrified of the group. This and the police rattling on the bookcase were the moments when I was most afraid. Oh, not my diary. If my diary goes, I go too. Thank goodness Father didn't say anything more. There's no point in recounting all the conversations. So much was said. I comforted Mrs. Van Dan, who was very frightened. We talked about escaping, being interrogated by the Gestapo, phoning Mr. Kleiman, and being courageous. "We must behave like soldiers, Mrs. Van Dan. If our time has come, well, then it'll be for Queen and country, for freedom, truth, and justice, as they're always telling us on the radio. The only bad thing is that we'll drag the others down with us." After an hour, Mr. Van Dan switched places with his wife again, and Father came and sat beside me. The men smoked one cigarette after another. An occasional sigh was heard. Somebody made another trip to the potty, and then everything began all over again. 4 o'clock, 5, 5:30. I went and sat with Peter by his window and listened, so close we could feel each other's bodies trembling. We spoke a word or two from time to time and listened intently. Next door, they took down the blackout screen. They made a list of everything they were planning to tell Mr. Kleiman over the phone, because they intended to call him at 7 and ask him to send someone over. They were taking a big chance, since the police guard at the door or in the warehouse might hear them calling. But there was an even greater risk that the police would return. I'm enclosing their list, but for the sake of clarity, I'll copy it here. Burglary. Police in building, up to bookcase, but no farther. Burglars apparently interrupted, forced warehouse door, fled through garden. Main entrance bolted. Kugler must have left through second door. Typewriter and adding machine safe in black chest in private office. Meeps or Bep's laundry and washtub in kitchen. Only Bep or Kugler have key to second door. Lock may be broken. Try to warn Jan and get key. Look around office. Also feed cat. For the rest, everything went according to plan. Mr. Kleiman was phoned. The poles were removed from the doors. The typewriter was put back in the chest. Then we all sat around the table again and waited for either Jan or the police.